Welcome back. And we're going to go to our phone lines and welcome Behram Antia from Vancouver, British Columbia. Deanna Klein and Aaron Rutten are all on the line now. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Vaughn,
I certainly want to love you and to all of the finalists. I want to say you did a wonderful job. It was quite an intimidating environment, I must say. There's quite an esteemed group panel of judges, but you all perform magnificently, and your ideas are something that I think we can all work on. I've been sharing them with Dr. Dworkin here, and we're going to have to work on these and get them out to all the people.
Well, Behram, I wanted to ask you first, with regards to your paper, which was the Canadian Healthcare System, a 2020 Vision, what was the sort of central themes or the problems that you identified in the system today that you want to see changed from this work that you've done for this vision for 2020?
The core idea in the paper was that an interactive personal health record would help change the system from being an institutional one to being person-centric. So the idea is that a personal health record is something that the individual, they can access their health information, but they can, more importantly, they can manage it and interact with the health system using information about themselves, both that comes from the system and that they put in themselves. So the idea being taking more responsibility for your own health through this personal health record that interacts with the larger health infrastructure.
Well, I got to tell you, this is music to my ears because this is what I'm actually doing in my office probably by the end of this year. We're incorporating an electronic medical record that allows the patients to access their records. They can even carry, they will be carrying with them if they travel or if they want to have with them at all times, a standalone application that keeps all their records on them. It's encrypted on a USB key. And they would take that with them wherever they went. Imaging studies, lab reports, everything is on this. And as well, they can access their records at our office. And if they have a question or if they have a suggestion to make, it will appear on their record. So in effect, what these documents become are living documents.
And I think that's a great first step. But what I was talking about for 2020, looking out a few years, is going beyond that and making the interactive personal health record interact with the existing electronic health record solutions that are coming online right now in every jurisdiction. So the idea is that we'll have national electronic health record infrastructures in place within a few years, and then the next step would be a fully interactive personal health record building on top of that as well.
Now, and I guess in terms of security, people would have, just like anything else, specific access codes. There would be an encryption. There would be a whole bunch of safeguards to prevent personal information from going where it's not supposed to go.
Right. Not only security, but we also have to think a lot about privacy and what information people will want their providers and others to know about. So privacy and security are huge issues, but I think they can be overcome. And I think the benefits of doing this will far outweigh the difficulties.
Well, it should be as they do with other security programs now or with information where you can the user can lock out or even have a checklist of who has access to what particular information, and therefore they have control over where that information goes.
Exactly.
I'd like to turn to Deanna Klein and Aaron Rutten and ask you about your setting. And again, this was health professionals in the school settings. And again, this is an area of interest of mine because for 10 years, I, along with another colleague of mine, ran a teaching program for residents at the University of Ottawa where we had an in-house school-based program, medical program, where we would counsel students, we would go to the classrooms and answer their questions that they would write down anonymously on paper. And it ran for about 10 years and was very, very satisfying to do. So I wanted to talk to you about what you had envisioned for the school setting.
I'll start. If Deanna's online, I can start. That kind of is exactly how our idea all came about. We were doing our final community health practicum in a school in a small town here in Saskatchewan, and they had us in to assist their health teacher with a sexual education class, and we had the kids write questions on paper to ask us.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we were preparing for the presentation ahead of time to get some things finished, and once we had their questions, we realized that everything we'd prepared was way beyond anything that they already knew. And they were asking us the most basic questions of anatomy, and so we pretty much overhauled our whole presentation, and we saw the need that these kids are 15, 16 years old and don't even know about their own bodies yet and are already becoming sexually active and have nobody to ask these questions to, really. So we started thinking about that and why health professionals aren't in the schools more, and we're kind of relying on public health nurses to do that work, and they aren't. They have so many other things to do that the school isn't really their priority. So we have almost the entire country's children in schools 197 days a year. Why aren't we implementing healthcare into that setting right now and catching them while they're young and developing healthy behaviors from kindergarten?
Now, how do you propose to set up this system?
Go ahead, Deanna.
We would want to be talking with both the education and the healthcare system. We want to approach both sides of it because they're both equally accountable to the children and to get this education into the schools. So our idea is to approach both sides and get people from on board and have funding from both places so that this can become a reality in our society.
One of the areas that schools will tell you, and this is the problem we faced, is that over time, with more and more demands on the curriculum from parents and from school boards providing more services for students, that the time left for the physicians and the residents to come into the classrooms especially was curtailed to such a severe degree that it was next to impossible to continue the program. So in other words, we were gradually phased out because of time constraints. So, and I completely agree with your proposals in terms of trying to get people into the schools, because absolutely prevention makes a huge difference. And that's exactly what we found for the 10 years that we were doing the program, that we made a difference in these students' lives because we were able to intervene at an earlier time before their behaviors or decisions took them on a path that would lead to harm. So I guess the question I'm asking is, how do we convince school boards and schools, one, that there should be sufficient time, and two, although we didn't find it too much in the school that we were at, there still are going to be concerns from parents with regards to confidentiality, with regards to how students are going to be counseled, what the topics are going to be. So those are some of the areas that I found were somewhat challenging that we overcame, and I would imagine that you've already considered in this particular proposal.
Yeah, our thoughts would be that our health professional would be on staff, just as a teacher would be on staff in the schools, and not so much coming into a class and taking away class time, but be employed full-time and be there from 9 in the morning till 5 at night so that students could access around class schedule as well, but to be very active in the school community and to be brought into class when health topics are being taught, or to be putting on additional programming during recess and during lunch and after schools, weekends. And as far as addressing the parents' concerns, some ideas that we thought of would be if there was a special information session going on for, say, teenagers, we would run a parallel session with the parents at the same time to have them informed as well, because I think a lot of the hesitation for parents having their kids learn things at school about health is that perhaps a lot of ignorance that they have themselves, and maybe we need to be educating them a little too. Deanna, anything you want to add there?
And just we want to take into consideration, like when we're implementing and planning these programs, we want everybody's ideas on what they see there needs to be. So we would be getting feedback from the teachers and the parents and the students so that we know that we are creating programs that would be addressing the needs that they feel are important to them. So hopefully with their involvement, they would be more willing to have these programs be implemented and participate in them.
And I'd like to just turn back to Bairam just for a few moments before we take a break. And I wanted to ask you, how would this be implemented? What do you see a certain staged process to implementing electronic medical records across the country?
Yes, basically, I think we have two basic stages. We have to build the underlying culture in health right now, and that's happening. So all the disparate systems are coming together and they're able to communicate. Once that happens and we have all types of different information from the different domains like laboratory and your prescription information and diagnostic imaging, once all that is connected and able to, the doctors are able to see that, then I think another step would be the electronic medical record systems in doctors' offices is the next major step. And then after that, personal access to electronic health records. So having the patient starting to interact with that health ecosystem of information. So I think there's certainly several stages, and it's going to take several years, but it's going to help us move towards a really exciting people-centered system that's responsive to the needs of all Canadians.
Well, Baramencia, Aaron Rutten, and Deanna Klein, I'd like to thank you very much and congratulations again for some great work. I think what you've done is actually is what I'd like to see happen. So I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time on Sunday to come and talk about it.
Thank you for having me.
And Vaughn, I'd like to thank you again for coming in, and I'm sure I'm going to be seeing you again pretty soon.
Oh, we will, Barry, and thank you very much. It means so much for the CHUM Network to help us out this way.
It's our pleasure, and all the best.
Alrighty, thank you.
Dr. Vaughn Glover is founding member of the Canadian Association for People-Centered Health. And when we come back, we'll be talking about trans fats with Dr. Robert Eckel, and the devil is in the details. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call.
You're listening to Dr.